Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, Baseball America Prospect Podcast, the second to last prospect podcast of the year. Yes, we will have that week between Christmas and New Year's where normally the podcasts kind of go away and dry up. We're not going to come back together to record it. We're recording it early, but we're going to have a little bit of a theme here. This is our podcast to wrap up 25, where we look back and we look at, give a couple of awards. We kind of look a little bit at 2025. And then next week on the podcast and also on YouTube, where we do our videos as well, we're going to look ahead to 2026 and we're going to make some predictions for where we will be a year from now. So with that, great to see you as always, Jeff. And we both have a little bit of maybe a rosy glow right now or like bags under our eyes or both, because we just finished the prospect handbook. It is now done. The last time we recorded one of these, we still had very much work still to do, but it is all done now. It is, the hay is in the barn, and please, if there is a typo or something like that, tell me next year, tell me early next year, if you get your hands on the digital copy that I'm emailing out today, because we're just going to hopefully kind of rest in the glow that we have that book done. How good does it feel to have that book behind you now, Jeff?
Feels pretty good, honestly. It's always a great feeling when, because it's a lot of hard work. It's a lot of fun too, putting it together. I won't deny that. I do enjoy the process of the rankings and reporting, gathering information, writing the reports, and putting together the grades and all the little details that go into the book. But it is a great feeling when it's off the floor, you're done proofing, and I think having the last week or two of the year to kind of catch your breath a little bit after, it really is like a nonstop, it's like a distance sprint.
It really is. So this is the perfect timing, though, for this, because what we're going to do today is we're going to look at a couple of things from the 25 season, which do tie into things we were just working on with the handbook. So we're going to look at most improved. We're giving our most improved award. Imagine this almost like this is our report cards here, or like it's a yearbook and we're doing our superlatives. But so, Jeff, when we look at the most improved farm system in 2025, where we sit right now compared to where we sat. Now, I'll say right now, because if you'd have asked me a week ago, maybe I would have said the Orioles, because the Orioles had that draft class that is just so deep, so many players in it. They also had some breakouts, like a Nate George breakout. Esteban Mejia is a very intriguing young arm. Samuel Basayo is a truly elite prospect, although Basayo kind of was that coming into the year too, but there are a lot of depth. But then they went out and traded Slater DeBrun, they traded Caden Bodine, they traded Austin Overn, they traded Michael Ferrett, they traded and a competitive balance pick. So they traded away four of their top 18 prospects, still an improved farm system, still a deeper farm system than it was a year ago. Dylan Beaver still qualifies, by the way, another guy who was improved in 2025, but probably wouldn't say them now because those are Rays prospects now. But I think I'm going to kick it to you, and I think that we have kind of the same answer, but if you don't, I'll come back to me. But who is your most improved farm system in 2025?
Yeah, and I have a little bias on this as well, because it is a farm system that I cover, but I do think it's the Cardinals. I think we just look year over year from where they were to where they are now. The J.J. Weatherholt, I don't want to say breakout because I think that's disingenuous, but
confirmation. How about that?
Yeah, confirmation is a good way to put it.
Because we thought he was a great prospect coming into the year.
Yes.
But he's confirmed it by what he did this year.
Exactly. And maybe even gotten a little bit better. The breakout of Rynel Rodriguez, I think, is a big one. The breakout of Josh Baez, who we'll probably talk about a little bit later. And then drafting Liam Doyle, drafting Tanner Franklin, really good season from Ishan Henderson. They got two of the better catchers in the minors in their top 10. They acquired Brandon Clark. So even when they had sort of down seasons from Quinn Matthews or, you know, an injury from Tekoa Roby, who's now out for a little bit. Tink Hentz taking a big step back is where it was going. Or injuries to like guys like Cooper Jerpy, who was a first rounder a few years ago. They were able to acquire enough talent through all these different acquisition windows, whether it's trades, even a Rule 5 pick that's kind of interesting. In the draft, I think you can kind of look at the system and say, all right, it's gotten a lot better. And then they were able to add again this week. And, you know, Blake Ada and, you know, Yorker Fajardo, like, not probably top 10 guys in this system. Ada's probably more like 25 to 30. And Fajardo probably 9 to 13, somewhere in that range. But they have a lot of different types of prospects in the system. They have a lot of pitching depth, and they have a lot of variety within that pitching depth. And you should be at least somewhat intrigued by what Chaim Bloom can do in terms of building out the development structure, which was part of his key focus over the last couple of years as he was sliding into that Pobo role. So, you know, I think this is an up and coming system. I think you look at the major league roster and, you know, I don't know how much an Arenado nets. I think that Brendan Donovan probably nets a little bit more than Arenado. And I think
lot more.
Sure. And Lars Nootbaar, if he gets traded, probably nets a decent amount as well. So there's a handful of players here that could potentially be on the move that could further sort of stockpile this system. I don't think they're going to end up with anyone who's going to rival either Weatherholt or Doyle or Rodriguez at the top of the system, or probably Baez for that matter. But this sort of 5 to 30 group will, I think, continue to improve between now when we're recording this and, you know, February 1st.
I think, like you said, they could make further moves as well. That was the one I was going to pick also. The Cardinals, to me, I do want to give a little honorable mention here. Like, the Pirates were already a good farm system coming into the year, but I would say that that's an organization that at the top end, they didn't, like, it's really a top heavy organization, you know, but to see Connor Griffin take that multiple steps forward like he did, Bubba Chandler continue to be what he was. And then I would say Edward Florentino kind of emerge as another elite hitting prospect. You put that together, and that's a much improved farm system over where it was, a year ago. So that's another one that stands out that way. But you also hit on that. We also wanted to talk about who's the most improved prospect. And again, we have agree on the number one here, but I think we probably should at least highlight some other players who kind of also meet that criteria. But so, Jeff, who is the most improved prospect in 2025 to you?
Yeah, I think staying with the Cardinals theme, it's Josh Baez. I think you just look on what his career trajectory was kind of out of the draft. A lot of injuries, the body and the athleticism backed up. There were major hit tool questions as, you know, a power hitter from the Northeast that maybe didn't have as much high-level experience as other guys and generally had a decent amount of swing and miss on the circuit. That came to fruition over his early years as a professional, really struggled with approach, struggled with swing and miss, always had power, but just was not making enough contact to consistently get to it. Revamped his swing coming into the year, made some more further adjustments over the first month. I think the biggest thing, though, is you kind of look physically year over year and everything just got a lot tighter, you know, the athleticism was back. He might have even looked and moved better than he even did, you know, in high school, when he was an impressive sort of athletic freak. Bats all back again, plus running ability, huge power, now not selling out for it. And, you know, is a little bit more hitterish just in terms of his approach and bat to ball ability and the underlying data and all that sort of stuff. Do I think he's a long-term center fielder? Probably not. But I think this could be like a power speed, you know, corner outfielder for a whole bunch of years in the majors that, you know, has some pretty impactful seasons.
I think he's the clear, like he was not in the top 30 for the Cardinals coming into the year, coming into 25. And now he's a likely top 100, pretty strongly likely top 100 prospect going into 2026. That's about as big a jump as you're going to see for a guy who was a known quantity. You see this with Josuar Gonzalez was, you know, like made a big jump, you know, from signing to where he is now. But when you see a DSL guy come out and set the world on fire and you're like, well, he took a big jump. It's like, no, he made his pro debut. You know, like that's a little different than a guy who was a known quantity. It's like, oh, we feel like we have an idea who Joshua Baez is. And then you look at him a year later, it's like, he's just so much better. I do want to highlight some other guys who I think, like, it sounds crazy to say that our number one prospect in the game, but I think it is fair to say that Connor Griffin is a much improved prospect over where he was at this time last year, because as we've detailed on this, as we've talked to Connor Griffin about, he really did rework his swing. He improved his swing from 25 or from 24 to 25. We've seen the effects of it. Couple of pitchers that really jump out. Peyton Tolley with the Red Sox is one who kind of really emerged. Cam Schlittler's graduated now. He was in the Yankees top 30 last year, but he's the perfect example that I love to use of how difficult it is to do this. We just put the handbook to bed. It's December, and I promise you somewhere in that book, there is a pitcher who we wrote up the most accurate pitching scouting report we can right now. And by April, we're going to be like, that report, you can tear it up. It's obsolete. Cam Schlittler was that last year, who went from 92, 93 coming out of the last year to sitting 98, touching 100 with an absolutely, you know, hellacious secondaries by October. That's one that jumps out that way to me. I would say Carter Jensen's another one who was already good, took another step forward. Now is kind of fits in that elite prospect category, the Royals catcher. Anyone else to you that jumps out is like, hey, while Baez is our number one most improved prospect, here's another guy who really did jump out.
I think Gage Stanifer from the Blue Jays. Mm-hmm. I could say Johnny King, but that's kind of like the same thing as the Josuar example, where it's like, well, he made his pro debut and signed for a decent amount of money. And, you know, he knew he was a good athlete, that sort of thing. Stanifer, you know, was like a 19th round high school pick 3 years ago. You know, took a couple of years to really adjust as a professional. Came out this year, all of his stuff was up. You know, better movement, more velocity, a lot more strikes. It's kind of all the things you want to see click at once, where it's like, all right, yeah, he added the stuff, or you know, this pitch is a lot cleaner in terms of movement, but he's not throwing any harder, or he's not throwing it for strikes. All that stuff was less of a concern, you know, and pitched his way all the way up to double A. So I think he's one for me that kind of jumps out as a guy that was off the Blue Jays top 30 list. Really, like, I might've been like 38, 39, 40 in those extra little blurbs that we put out after the new year. Not a guy I anticipated would be, you know, in the top 100 conversation and, you know, in the top half of the top 10 for the Blue Jays.
A couple other guys I will point out. Dodgers outfielder was at this time last year, I think still Reds outfielder, Mike Sirota, who was a considered a potential first-round pick going into his draft year. Was hurt, didn't really kind of have that step forward. So I think it was a fourth-round pick. Did have injuries again this year, missed the second half of the year, but when he was healthy, Sirota really was, you know, established himself as a clear number, you know, top 100 prospect. Jefferson Rojas, I think, fits this also, another guy that you do. Because didn't Rojas kind of take a nice step forward, I would say, in 25? Is that accurate?
Yeah, repeated, like, high A, because he was super young when he was there. Showed improvement there, you know, got up to double A and performed pretty well. Yeah, I mean, I think there's, with Rojas, there's maybe a few more questions regarding the defense than I had anticipated coming into the year, frankly. But yeah,
he's a different prospect now than we thought coming in.
Yeah, it's a little bit more of a bat first, second baseman, maybe third baseman, because it's a big arm. And I think there could be more power coming. But yeah, I mean, had a really good year in the Midwest League and then struggled a little bit once he got up to Double A. But the Southern League isn't exactly the easiest place to hit either. Still only 20.
One other I'll highlight is TJ Nichols with the Rays, who was kind of always considered a good stuff but wild pitcher in college, and now is throwing, you know, has maybe above average control, you could argue, which is a very big step up for him. A lot of guys who took stuff forward. We want to highlight some of the guys who really did, because guys. Okay, go ahead.
I was going to say Tanner McDougal and Christian Hopper, both of the White Sox. Pretty big breakouts between the two of them. And, you know, I don't think either will probably be on the top 100. Maybe McDougal has a shot at the back end. But I think definitely within that, like 75 to 125 tier that we always talk about, that they might be off the top 100, but they're sort of just off the top 100 and certainly within the conversation. And if either of those guys took another step forward this year, I think we could see him in the big leagues, you know, by the middle of the summer.
Okay. The last thing as we look back on this year, we're not going to praise our, you know, this is the prediction I'm most proud of. That seems a little bit back on, you know, patting on the back. We're going to go the other way. The prediction I would want to do over on from this past year is this. I did look back at our MLB predictions, and I would say that yours were really good, Jeff. I had a couple that, like I said, that the Twins were going to be my surprise team of 2025. And I mean, technically, you could argue they did surprise. They were surprisingly worse in the second half after the trade-off than I would have maybe predicted. But I'll start with this one. My little self-flagellation here. We just got done doing the 30s. And, you know, I really came into the season, and I'm not trying to pick on prospects, right? But Braden Taylor was a guy who I really thought was that kind of that embodiment of the safe college bat who gets drafted every year, middle infielder, second baseman, third baseman, who can just do everything really pretty well, like a lot of 50s and 55s on the scouting card. And this year was really kind of a step back year. I would say that he really, like, if you look at it now, you look at it, and it's like, okay, he had a really struggled, and the final month of the season after got to Double A, that just got worse in 25. Probably got a little bit too power hungry, pull heavy. Swing didn't really work with that. But that's a guy who went from being a top 100 guy, largely because of where I had him ranked on the Rays, to a guy who was fighting to make the Rays top 30 this year. That's one that I wish I had to do over. I'm sure you probably have a couple too. Anyone that comes to mind for you, Jeff?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think the one that bothers me the most is like ones you don't make, that you kind of look at it and you're like, that was really obvious. And I feel like I could have been more aggressive in terms of my love for Nick Kurtz and just my belief that he was going to hit and going to hit immediately. I don't think I could have predicted, obviously, what he did. But I think I was a little bit.
You didn't have a 4 home run game in your prediction?
No, but, you know, like it made a lot of sense that he would move as quickly as he did. And I think they kind of telegraphed it a little bit by sending him to AFL after the draft. I think I was scared off more or less just by the injury history with Kurtz, because, you know, I mean, he never played baseball during the summer when he was in college, because he always had a different surgery that he had to undergo in the offseason. So, like, it wasn't like it was completely unfounded, but I think, like, that one, and it's sort of the same with Treyus Savage, who we were all really, really high on. You know, Carlos and the amateur team were high on you, Savage. I think as soon as he went pro, we were high on him. He was kind of the main focus of my early spring training trip, was like, I want to see Treyus Savage pitch live. I think I could have been more aggressive with that one too. Now, granted, we can't predict that he's going to go and, you know, set a record in the World Series, right? But you knew he'd be good.
Those are, you know, yours are a little more positive than mine. I'll say that, you know, mine was, you know, I have regrets, but you know, that wonder, happens.
I have another one, your regret? which is Orelvis Martinez. Sorry, I had to sneeze, so I had to go quiet for a second, but, no, I think Orelvis Martinez, like, I really bought into the improvements the year or two prior. You know, his second test or taste of Double A was much better. Then he went up to AAA and he performed. And then the next year he performs again in AAA, gets the call up to the majors, then fails the PED test. And it's like, well, we've seen plenty of guys fail PED tests and then be good after. So it's not like that's never happened before. Maybe I should have been more skeptical because he never got up to the big leagues again. The team ended up releasing him. So, you know, there was obviously a lot more wrong there than I thought. And it went about as south, as far south as it possibly could. It's very rare that we rank prospects in the top 10 that don't get protected in the Rule 5 draft, let alone guys that don't like they get released. That almost never happens.
That's so rare.
Really unusual that always... situation. Maybe we'll know more in years down the road of what truly happened there. But yeah, really, really, that was unusual. And obviously, I could eat that one a little bit.
We all have our regrets. But we hope you've enjoyed this look back at 2025. We hope that you're having a wonderful holidays, whether that's Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever you celebrate. We hope you're having a wonderful holidays. And as we said, we will be back next week with one more prospect podcast for 2025. Whether you get us on your favorite podcast feed or you check us out on YouTube at Baseball America's YouTube channel. We know that there are more of you now than there were when the year began, and we really do appreciate that. Please like, subscribe, leave a review, leave a comment. What is your biggest, most improved prospect or most improved farm system? Make the case for who you think might be the best. We'd love to see it. I love to respond to a lot of those as well on the YouTube channel. For Jeff, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.